The following is a lecture given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on May 7, 1985 in New Panihati Dham in Atlanta, Georgia. The class begins with a reading from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, Chapter 1, Text 191 through 208.
Patit pavan hetu tumar avatar Amavari jagate patit nahiya. Translation. Sri Rupa and Sanatan submitted. Dear Lord, you have incarnated to deliver the fallen souls. You should consider that in this world there is none so fallen as us. Jaghai madhai dui kori le udar taha udarite sramo nahi tumar. Translation. You have delivered the two brothers Jaghai and Madhai, but to deliver them you did not have to exert yourself very much.
Brahman jati tara novodipe ghor nicha seva nahi kore nohe niche kurpar.
Translation. The brothers Jaghai and Madhai belong to the Brahmana caste, and their residence was in the holy place of Navadvipa. They never served low-class persons, nor were they instruments to abominable activities.
Sabe yaka doshatar hoya papachar paparasi dohe namabhase tumar.
Translation. Jaghai and Madhai had but one fault. They were addicted to sinful activity. However, volumes of sinful activity can be burned to ashes simply by a dim reflection of the chanting of your holy name. Translation with repetition. Jaghai and Madhai had but one fault. They were addicted to sinful activity. However, volumes of sinful activity can be burned to ashes simply by a dim reflection of the chanting of your holy name. Purport. Srila Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami presented themselves as being lower than the two brothers Jaghai and Madhai, who were delivered by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When Rupa and Sanatana compared themselves to Jaghai and Madhai, they found themselves inferior because the Lord had no trouble in delivering two drunken brothers. This was so because despite the fact that they were addicted to sinful activity, in other ways their life was brilliant. They belonged to the Brahmana caste of Navadvipa, and such Brahmanas were pious by nature. Although they had been addicted to some sinful activities due to bad association, those unwanted things could vanish simply because of the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. Another point for Jaghai and Madhai was that, as members of a Brahmana family, they did not accept service under anyone. The Shastras strictly forbid a Brahmana to accept service under anyone. The idea is that by accepting a master, one accepts the occupation of a dog. In other words, a dog cannot thrive without having a master. And for the sake of pleasing the master, dogs offend many people. They bark at innocent people just to please the master. Similarly, when one is a servant, he has to perform abominable activities according to the orders of the master. Therefore, when Davira Kasha and Sakura Malika compared their position to that of Jagai and Madhai. They found Jagai and Madhai's position far better. Jagai and Madhai never accepted the service of a low-class person, nor were they forced to execute abominable activities under the order of a low-class master. Jagai and Madhai chanted the name of Sri Chaitanya by way of blasphemy. But because they simply chanted his name, they immediately became free from the reactions of sinful activities. Thus, later, they were saved. Let's end Srila Prabhupada's purport of text 194. Using logic and reason, Rupa and Sanatana are trying to convince Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that, in fact, because he is the most merciful, the one who delivers the most fallen souls, that actually they do deserve to be delivered first, immediately, because they are trying to say that they qualify. They are the most fallen souls. Sometimes in some countries, the government gives some special facility to the minority groups. And so people try to prove that they belong to a minority group to get those facilities. So here, they know that Lord Chaitanya gives his mercy to the most fallen, so they're trying to present their credentials, that we are the most fallen, therefore we should get the mercy first. This is, on one point, contains a lot of rasa. Normally, in material society, one is struggling how to put oneself in a higher position, how to present oneself as more than he is, or at least put up front his better side. But here is unique to see these two great souls trying to present their case. Why they are the most fallen? Why, therefore, they deserve to get the mercy first? Because there's no one more fallen and abominable than they are. And this is quite unique. It is only possible for great souls to have that type of humility. Text 195. Tumar nama loya, tumar kurilo nindan, se nama hilo ta muktira karan. Jagai and Madhai uttered your holy name by way of blaspheming you. Fortunately, that holy name became the cause of their deliverance. Even though Lord Chaitanya's name was being taken in an offensive way, Lord Chaitanya was so merciful that even chanting his name offensively has the purifying effect. Hell, it purified those two brothers, Jagai and Madhai. This is the potency of the holy name, that offensively, in a clearing stage or even the offenseless stage, the chanting of the holy name only does all good. It's because the Lord is all good. Jagai Madhai Haite Koti Koti Gun Adhama Potita Papi Ami Duijan. They continue. We too are millions and millions of times inferior to Jagai and Madhai. We are more degraded, fallen, and sinful than they. Mlecho jati, mlecho sebi, kori mlecho karma, go brahmandrohi sange amar sangam. Actually, we belong to the caste of meat eaters because we are servants of meat eaters. Indeed, our activities are exactly like those of the meat eaters because we always associate with such people. We are inimical toward the cows and Brahmana. Purport. There are two kinds of meat eaters. One who is born in a family of meat eaters and one who has learned to associate with meat eaters. From Srila Rupa and Sanatan Goswamis, formerly W. Akash and Sakur Malik, we can learn how one attains the character of a meat eater simply by associating with meat eaters. At the present moment in India, the presidential offices are occupied by many so-called brahmanas, but the state maintains slaughterhouses for killing cows and makes propaganda against Vedic civilization. The first principle of Vedic civilization is the avoidance of meat eating and intoxication. Presently in India, intoxication and meat eating are encouraged, and the so-called learned brahmanas presiding over this state of affairs have certainly become degraded according to the standard given herein by Srila Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami. These so-called brahmanas give sanction to slaughterhouses for the sake of a fat salary, and they do not protest these abominable activities. By deprecating the principles of Vedic civilization and supporting cow killing, they are immediately degraded to the platform of mlechas and javanas. A mlecha is a meat eater, and a javana is one who has deviated from Vedic culture. Unfortunately, such mlechas and javanas are in executive power. How then can there be peace and prosperity in the state? The king or the president must be the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When Maharaj Yudhishthira accepted the rule of Bharatavarsha, formerly this entire planet, including all the seas and land, he took sanction from authorities like Bhishma, Deva, and Lord Krishna. He thus ruled the entire world according to religious principles. At the present moment, however, heads of state do not care for religious principles. If irreligious people vote on an issue, even though it be against the principles of the Shastras, the bills will be passed. The presidents and heads of state become sinful by agreeing to such abominable activities. Sanatana and Rupa Goswamis pleaded guilty to such activities. They therefore classified themselves among the mlechas, although born in a brahmana family. So, these are very serious statements Srila Prabhupada has made. We see that there are two types of mlechas. Those people who are meat eaters by habit. Those who are born in the family of meat eaters and those who become meat eaters by associating. It's like some people from India when they come here by association, they learn. Even though in Gujarat or their home places they may not be meat eaters. Or, as Prabhupada has explained, even the so-called, or even the leaders of the state in India, they sometimes get implicated by all of these habits. But even in the Constitution of India, there's a clause that says that their goal is to have cow protection. But it was written in such a weak way that they make it voluntary. Although that was one of the things Mahatma or Gandhiji was putting in. He wanted it to be followed very strictly. But after he left, they just keep it there in name only. And in spite of having that in the Constitution, even in spite of one of Gandhiji's very close associates fasting until death and dying, they still have not the strength or purpose to stop government-organized cow slaughter. The point they made is that, of course, some people are there who are going to eat meat. So then let them slaughter on their own. Let them, if they're going to do something for some religious reason or whatever, they can do that on their own. For that, you don't need slaughterhouses organized by the government. So, since a king or head of state gets 1/6 of all the karma in that country, so because that country, if they're having slaughterhouses, especially organized by the government itself, then that means that they're going to get so many sinful reactions. Even in America, although there's so many slaughterhouses, but it's not specifically organized by the government. It's just done as a kind of a private trade. But in India, it's actually licensed by the government for some reason, because it's more socialistic. So many of these things are under the government. In any case, whether governmentally licensed or directly organized, the reaction is still there. So culture based upon meat-eating, animal slaughtering, naturally is going to be involved in so many wars. Srila Prabhupada said the reason why Vietnam came to be was because of so much animal slaughter in America. There's a reaction the American youth had to also be slaughtered. And practically that's what it was. No one can say what is the positive result of the Vietnam War. Even after 10 years to think about it, they still haven't come up with a positive result. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's very merciful to these meat eaters and lechas. But his mercy is not just to forgive them for their sins so that they can continue to bathe in the blood of slaughtered animals. But rather that they can be forgiven for whatever karma they have performed, which will bring them suffering in the future, and so that they can rectify themselves and become free from the bad habits of this type of sinful activities. So, this is very wonderful. Lord Chaitanya is willing to deliver anyone, no matter what culture, what race, what place in the world. But after delivering them, then they become rectified and they give up their bad habits. Thus they become qualified as Vaishnavas and as Brahmanas. A pure Vaishnava is automatically a Brahmana. Here, Srila Prabhupada gives a little jab against one aspect of democracy. That if the people themselves are allowed to degenerate, and if the leaders whom they elect lose their leadership ability and become incapable of giving any good advice to the people who elect them, or the public opinion becomes temporarily swayed by some malefic influence, that they don't have the character or the strength of purpose to be able to resist something which they know is bad for population at large. And those leaders themselves, they just become practically useless, and they also become implicated in a sinful reaction. So there's always a need of a very powerful leader who can stick by the principles, come what may. What is the use of simply maintaining power for power's sake if by doing so one simply is going to accumulate sinful reactions? Then rather than be head of state, the person would be better off bowing out gracefully if things become so degenerated. At least one would not be implicated in a sinful reaction and could live a life of self-respect and ultimately be able to achieve spiritual perfection. Better to continue struggling for the cause of spiritual purity and upliftment of the people at large, rather than just prostitute oneself for the sake of temporary power and lose all one's pious results. Mora karma mora hati golaya bandhya Kubishoya Vishtagarte Diache Filaya. Translation. The two brothers, Sakar, Malika, and Davir Kasa, very humbly submitted that due to their abominable activities, they were now bound by the neck and hands and had been thrown into a ditch filled with abominable stool-like objects of material sense enjoyment. Purport. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur has explained Kubishoya Gartha as follows. Because of the activities of the senses, we become subjected to many sense gratificatory processes and are thus entangled by the laws of material nature. This entanglement is called vishoya. When the sense gratificatory processes are executed by pious activity, they are called subishoya. The word su means good, and vishoya means sense objects. When the sense gratificatory activities are performed under sinful conditions, they are called kubishoya, bad sense enjoyment. In either case, either kubishoya or subishoya, these are material activities. As such, they are compared to stool. You know, stool means the excrement, if someone doesn't know. In other words, such things are to be avoided. To become free from subishoya and kubishoya, one must engage himself in the transcendental loving service of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The activities of devotional service are free from the contamination of material qualities. Therefore, to be free from the reactions of subishoya and kubishoya, one must take to Krishna consciousness. In that way, one will save himself from contamination. In this connection, Srila Narottama Das Thakur has sung, Karmo kando gano kando kebo vishebando. Omrita bulya jivakai. Nana yoni sarasire. Kharajya bakkhana kore. Tai janmo artha pate jai. Subishoya and Kubishoya both fall under the category of karma kanda. There is another kanda, platform of activity called Gyanakanda, or philosophical speculation about the effects of Kubishoya and Subishoya with the intention to find out the means of deliverance from material entanglement. On the platform of Gyanakanda, one may give up the objects of Kubishoya and Subishoya, but that is not the perfection of life. Perfection is transcendental to both Gyanakanda and Karmakanda. It is on the platform of devotional service. If we do not take to devotional service in Krishna consciousness, we have to remain within this material world and endure the repetition of birth and death due to the effects of Gyanakanda and Karmakanda. Therefore, Narottam Das Thakur says, Nana yone sada fire kadaj bakkhana kore ta janma adhapate jai. Translation. One travels throughout various species of life and eats all kinds of nonsense. Thus he spoils his existence. End of translation. Similarly, material activities may be either pious or impious, but because they are all material, they are compared to stool. Worms cannot get out of stool by their own endeavor. Similarly, those who are overly attached to material existence cannot get out of materialism and suddenly become Krishna conscious. Attachment is there, as explained by Prahlad Maharaj in Srimad Bhagavatam 7:5:30. Matir na krishne parata swato va mito vipadyeta griha bratanam adanta gobi visatang tamisrang Puna punas charvita charvananam. Translation. Those who have made up their minds to remain in this material world and enjoy sense gratification cannot become Krishna conscious because of their attachment to material activity. They cannot attain liberation, neither by the instructions of superior persons, nor by their own endeavor, nor by passing resolutions and big conferences. Because their senses are uncontrolled, they gradually descend to the darkest regions of material existence to repeat the same process of birth and death in desirable or undesirable species of life. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purport of text 198. Translation was, the two brothers Sakar Malik and Dabyakas very humbly submitted that due to their abominable activities, they were now bound by the neck and hands and had been thrown into a ditch filled with abominable stool-like objects of material sense enjoyment. So, these are very graphic description to hear such graphic statements from such exalted souls is certainly something wonderful, something extraordinary, but obviously they feel very strongly about this point, otherwise they would not use such graphic example. I don't know if you've ever seen crimson stool. In India, sometimes they have a system of sanitation, which is to dig a hole in the ground and all of the abominable things go in the hole. And there, after some time, it's filled with worms who are swimming around, type of maggot-type worms. Even they want to, they can't get out of there. And they also like it there because that's their food and that's their family and that's everything. So this example is given. What is the difference if a worm is attached to eating stool and living there with all of his friends? Or if a person is attached to eating all kind of abominable things and simply living for sense enjoyment? There's no higher purpose in that person's life than the purpose of life of that worm in stool. They both are brothers in purpose. Their purpose is to get the most happiness out of life through sense gratification. They have no higher understanding of spiritual life. Simply, the worm is doing it by eating stool, and the other, you see, materialistic person is doing it by eating also other abominable things and by just trying to enjoy the senses through meat-eating, intoxication, illicit sex, and gambling. Rather, a worm in the stool is in many ways more elevated because he has no choice. He's born there and doesn't know any better, has no real alternative. But a human being has the alternative to lead a spiritual life, to lead a life for the welfare of others, to thus not only uplift oneself, but to uplift all others. If they, by choice, or having the choice, they choose to lead the worm-like life of just swimming in an ocean of sense gratification, oblivious to their higher purpose, then are they not even more fallen than a worm? So, these are very graphic examples they've given, but they want to make their point very strongly. And their example is not inappropriate or unfounded. So the great acharyas like Prahlad Maharaj, they've advised us to avoid engaging in a useless life of sense gratification, but to rather use all of our energy for engaging in Krishna conscious activities. When we can do that, we should consider that as perfection. Although Dabir Kas and Sakar Malik, they are from a high family and they're in a very powerful position of government. But because their aim in life is becoming Krishna conscious, so they're so humble that they're analyzing their own characteristic with this type of very strict judgment, and presenting themselves as the most fallen of the fallen. That means that one should place the highest perfection as the goal of life, trying to become 100% Krishna conscious. And then compared to that, we should always analyze and find out to ourselves, taking help from Guru and senior Vaishnavas, the scripture, Where are our weak points? Where are we short of the mark? And thus try to get the blessings of Guru and Krishna so we can, and Vaishnava, so we can advance. If we don't set our sights for the 100% mark, then how can we ever even come close? Naturally, material nature wants us to always feel very satisfied in a less than perfect condition. So our tendency will be, whatever position we're in, to try to rationalize and consider ourselves to be very rightly situated, very advanced, very perfect. This is the nature of the material world. So you find people who, even devotees, who stop trying to purify themselves. So here we have the example from Rupan Sanatan or Dabir Kas and Sakar Malik, that although they were highly elevated devotees, even though they were not, doesn't indicate that they themselves were meat eaters, they say they were working for meat eaters, but they consider themselves practically as fallen just by association. That means that because they are not living directly in association with the devotees, because they have to associate in the material world, they've taken a very humble position. This is the example. If someone is not living directly in the society of devotees, even if they're following so many Krishna conscious principles, if they glorify themselves and consider themselves to be very great, by that they're not at all going to benefit. It says that Indra says that he himself is very significant, then he becomes less significant than a little bug. But even a very insignificant person praises Indra, or praises even another insignificant person, that person becomes very great. We've seen that in the newspapers, they glorify someone, even though the people writing in the newspaper are nothing special. But by their putting it in print, those people become very famous. They become considered great. It's more like a moral instruction. But spiritually, if we're trying to reach the 100% mark, or approach it, even if we are, if we can clear 70-80%, there's a good chance we can get the mercy of Krishna. We have to try for it, but if we may be on the 20% mark and we're thinking that already I'm very advanced, even if we're on the 50%, even if we're on the 80% mark, of course, ultimate score is kept by Krishna. We should always be trying to go for 100%. And if you try to be 100% Krishna conscious, then where is the reason for ever becoming nonchalant or careless or casual in one's devotional service? Even Radharani, who is 100% Krishna conscious, considers herself to be less than 100% Krishna conscious. And she's always trying to become 100% Krishna conscious. Therefore, we can understand that the real nature of Krishna consciousness is to always be endeavoring to become more Krishna conscious. So even the devotees living in a society of devotees, naturally they will also take a humble position. What to speak of others who are not so fortunate? Even if they are, we may glorify, oh, that you're a very nice devotee, in spite of living outside the temple and practicing your devotional service, living outside in the material world, you're still so determined that you're doing devotional service. We may glorify someone. Then they become glorified. That's their... But if they start to think that even though I have to associate with so many abominable things and abominable people, and that I have to live outside the pure association of the holy Dhams and the holy Vaishnav communities, and somehow or another I have to deal in so many materialistic activities, business or service or whatever, just to make a living, where the pure Vaishnavas, they can just do arati and take only prasad. They don't have to be like as a pujari or as a preacher without having to do all this other type of lower level activities. If such a person outside takes that humble position, respecting the Vamana Vaishnava preachers, that is most purifying for them. And that sets them up to get more and more mercy. They may actually be able to advance to the highest perfection of Krishna consciousness, but only if they follow in the footsteps of these great devotees, Rupa and Sanatan, who although they were in that situation, they were actually practicing their Krishna consciousness, reading the Bhagavatam every day, but they're comparing themselves as being lower than the worms in stool. That means that they're very eager to get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. When someone has the attitude that I have already got the mercy, I don't need anyone else's mercy, don't need the mercy of Vaishnava or Guru, or I've got a hotline with Guru and Krishna, I don't need the association of the Vaishnavas, that person is by definition fallen. He's already easing his way out. Because that is not a Vaishnava attitude. That is an attitude due to association with meat eaters and javana, that one gets that type of a hard-hearted attitude. A Vaishnava is naturally humble, meek, and looking for the association of more advanced Vaishnavas. He's always considering himself very insignificant. So we should take example from how this Rupa and Sanatana Goswamis, when they were Dabir Khas and Thakur Malik, how they maintained this extraordinary, wonderful, humble attitude, practically pleading their case to Lord Chaitanya, how they're deserving of Lord Chaitanya's mercy due to their being the most fallen souls. Srila Prabhupada said that a disciple should consider himself a fool before the spiritual master. Similarly, a Vaishnava, a devotee of the Lord, if they want to advance, then the way to do it, one has to dive deep in the ocean of devotional service. And one has to stay right on the bottom, because Maya has got her nets and she's trying to catch anyone who comes up to the too close to the surface. The way one stays very deep is by staying very humble. In the Gaudiya Math, there was once one acharya who he challenged that I am so fixed up in my devotional service that I challenged Maya, she cannot make me ever fall down. Within a few years, he was finished. This is not the way we avoid Maya. Of course, we're in a battle with Maya, but we use more the guerrilla warfare tactic of going deep below Maya, letting her fly over with her tanks and big aircraft carriers and fishing nets and whatnot, and we just stay far below and we just make a few skirmishes and grab a few souls and bring them down also, so that they don't get snatched by Maya. Head-on battle we try to avoid, because Maya is very powerful. So best thing is to just
avoid by humility and always staying under the lotus feet of the spiritual master and the pure Vaishnavas. So, just in conclusion here, read a few more verses that they really, they really take their humility to the extreme.
Ama udari te boli nahi tribhuvane potito pavo na tumi sobe tuma bine.
Translation. No one within the three worlds is sufficiently powerful to deliver us. You are the only savior of the fallen souls. Therefore, there is no one but you.
Ama udariya jodi dekhao nijobo potito pavo nam tobe se sofo.
If you simply deliver us by your transcendental strength, then certainly your name will be known as the savior of the fallen souls.
Satya akabat kaho suno doyamoy mobinu doya patro jagate na hoy.
Let us speak one word that is very true.
Plainly hear us, O merciful one. There is no other object of mercy within the three worlds but us.
More doya kori koro swa doya safal. Akila brahmanda dekuk tuma doyabo. We are the most fallen. Therefore, by showing us your mercy is most successful. Let the power of your mercy be exhibited throughout the entire universe.
Nam nisha paramartameva me shrinu vigyapanam ekam agrataha yaddi mena dvayishyase toda doyani astavata sadurlabaha.
Let us submit one piece of information before you, dear Lord. It is not at all false, but it is full of meaning. It is this. If you are not merciful upon us, then it will be very, very difficult to find more suitable candidates for your mercy. Purport. This verse is from the Stotra Ratna 47 by Sri Yamuna Acharya.
Apone ajo godeki mone pao khob tathapi tumar guna upajoyalob.
We are very distressed at being unfit candidates for your mercy. Yet since we have heard of your transcendental qualities, we are very much attracted to you.
Vamun joy chen chan dhori te chahe kore toi che ae bancha mor uthaye antore.
Indeed, we are like a dwarf who wants to capture the moon. Although we are completely unfit, a desire to receive your mercy is awakening in our minds.
Bhavantang eva nucharam niranta prasanta nisesha manoratantara kadahamaikantika nitya kinkara prahashayishyami sanata jivitam.
By serving you constantly, one is freed from all material desires and is completely pacified. When shall I engage as your permanent eternal servant and always feel joyful to have such a fitting master? Purport. In his teachings to Sanatan Goswami, Sri Chaitanya would you like to read them? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has declared every living entity to be an eternal servitor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the constitutional position of all living entities. Just as a dog, a servant, is very satisfied to get a competent, perfect master, or as a child is completely satisfied to possess a competent father, so the living entity is satisfied by completely engaging in the service of the Supreme Lord. How is the living entity satisfied? By completely engaging in the service of the Supreme Lord. He thereby knows that he has a competent master to save him from all kinds of danger. Unless the living entity comes together, guaranteed protection of the Supreme Lord, he is full of anxiety. This life of anxiety is called material existence. To be completely satisfied and devoid of anxiety, one must come to the position of eternally rendering service to the Supreme Lord. This verse is also from the Stotra Ratna by Yamuna Acharya. Suni Mahaprabhu kohe sunodariyar kas tumi dui bai mor puratana das. After hearing the prayer of Dabir Kas and Sakur Malika, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "My dear Dabir Kas, you two brothers are my old servants. Aji hoite duhar nam rupa sanatan, dvaino cha tumar dvaino fate mormon." Translation: my dear Sakur Malik, from this day your names will be changed to Srila Rupa and Srila Sanatan. Now please abandon your humility, for my heart is breaking to see you so humble. Translation with repetition: my dear Sakur Malik, from this day your names will be changed to Srila Rupa and Srila Sanatana. Now please abandon your humility, for my heart is breaking to see you so humble. Purport: actually, this is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's initiation of Dabir Kas and Sakar Malik. They approached the Lord with all humility, and the Lord accepted them as old servants, as eternal servants, and he changed their names. It is to be understood from this that it is essential for a disciple to change his name after initiation. Shankha Chakradyudvapundra Dharanadhyatma Lakshanam Tannama Karanam Chaiva Vaishnavatvam Ihochate. Translation: after initiation, the disciple's name must be changed to indicate that he is a servant of Lord Vishnu. The disciple should also immediately begin marking his body with tilak, urdvapundra, especially his forehead. These are spiritual marks, symptoms of a perfect Vaishnava. This is a verse from the Padma Purana Uttarakhanda. A member of the Sargiya Sampradaya does not change his name, therefore he cannot be accepted as a Gaudiya Vaishnava. If a person does not change his name after initiation, it is to be understood that he will continue in his bodily conception of life. Thus end the purport by Srila Prabhupada. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila, Chapter 1, up to text 208. Are there any questions? Yes? Certainly it's offenses, but they have to take responsibility. Although they have to take responsibility for the offenses that they commit, for whatever devotional service that they have rendered, they also don't lose the effect. That means that they may get other opportunities. If they're so unfortunate that they fail to take advantage of those different opportunities when they come up, then eventually they could lose that spiritual advantage and have to suffer the reactions of all their sinful activities. So, if a person has performed some devotional service, and because of bad association, they go into materialistic sense gratification, sinful activities, that can again be cleared away fairly easily by devotional service. But if in doing so they are offensive to other Vaishnavas or to their spiritual master, then their position is very unfortunate, and their ability to again achieve pure Krishna consciousness is very much delayed. So we should always avoid offenses to the Vaishnavas and to the spiritual master under any circumstances.
Even if he makes a little advance on the path, there's no loss, diminution. There's no loss. That's to bring it over. This is a very important question Arjuna is asking for everyone, because everyone has doubts that if I take to this path, suppose I do, this is an honest, sincere thing, because many people come to our society, this doubt often holds them back, that if I try this and I fall away, then what will happen to me? So we have to preach to them and assure them that if you can do a little bit, if you, whatever you can do, even if you just can remain at home, can't live with us, but if you can chant in a humble state of mind, this humility that we're being shown by the example this morning, Guru Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, that here they were in a position, a most abominable association. They themselves had no desire, for example, for taking meat, but because they associated with meat eaters, they said, we have their mentality, we're against the cows, we're against the Brahmins, simply because we associate with these people. But they had humility. See, So the answer to that kind of doubt is that even if you do a little bit and you're unable to consistently remain in that platform, whatever little advancement you can make, and then as Jaya Thakurai just so nicely pointing out, but if one makes, the more one makes a commitment, suppose he takes initiation from the spiritual master, then the spiritual master is implicated in his sinful activities after he takes initiation. The spiritual master, I'd say this is a sample, but I won't give the name, but one of my Guru God brothers was asked, if you had a good rest, he said, I don't sleep, I go to hell. So that Srila Prabhupada mentioned that a spiritual master who has disciples who are offending him, he dreams all kinds of bad things as a reaction. Whereas if a disciple or a Vaishnava is making advancement, the Bhagavatam says that he has his own bad dreams. If he's very sincere, he has his own bad dreams, and that he dreams his material desires and they go away by that dream and he's not affected. But if that person, he actually goes away from the standard, then he gives that bad experience to his spiritual master. So such a person is actually in a very pitiable position that he takes a vow. But even that person, because the spiritual master is very merciful, and Lord Chaitanya is very merciful, all that they can come back to the standard by again taking up the same process. Same process. So I just want to make that point that humility can save us in the temple or out of the temple. And Dabarkas, they're like they pulls up all these big learned men to administrators and have their PhD, and they're all, that's a common now, but they don't have any humility. They have no humility to come to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even though all arguments are given, to convince them, why not take the mercy? So this is a very, very nice example, and a very nice question was asked. But we have to learn from Arjuna who knew, or Krishna who knew, that there'd be people in the future that would have this doubt, and let me allay this doubt once and for all, that there's no loss, even if you don't make very far, make much advancement, and you take up again. But it'll save you from those abominable conditions, which is what? To take birth as a cat or a dog. Anyone who takes devotional service and even goes away, guaranteed they'll take a human birth, no matter what. Because by chanting the holy name, even the sins they're going to commit in the future, if they're sincere, that's taken into account also. So they at least won't take birth as a dog, take birth as a human being, and again they get the opportunity of associating with the spiritual master.
So we have to be careful. We accept the spiritual master, and we have to be very careful that we don't, after getting that mercy, go on and again associate with the wrong people, again do some nonsense, cause pain to the spiritual master, whose only business is simply to give his energy to Srila Prabhupada, to give his energy to Krishna, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and to maintain us in devotional service. He's making a sacrifice of his life. He gives so much time and energy. Actually, his life is not his own. No privacy, no nothing of his own. He simply gives to his disciples and to anyone who wishes. Prabhupada said that, I just neglected everything. 10 years I neglected my health. I could have lived, Srila Prabhupada could have lived a much older age, no question. Because look at his background, look at his spiritual facility, look at his habits, his whole life, at Nitya Siddha. Why didn't he stay longer? Because the sacrifice had to be made for us. So that sacrifice goes on by his disciples, and it has to be appreciated. That we have to be serious about this Krishna consciousness. Very, very serious about it. And fill this whole room with aspiring disciples and followers of Lord Chaitanya. So when Jaya Pataka Raj comes, there'll be many, many people to want to hear this spiritual knowledge from a strict follower of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Since Mahalas in America, we were caught up in 83 years or in our earlier late 20s when Prabhupada came, and how is it that each individual, after taking initiation, what is it that the spiritual master is giving that will enable us to become free from that mentality of being rebellious and being trying to lower our senses over materialness? What is that that enables us to just perpetually stay here in the material world? Why don't we, after learning about Krishna consciousness, why don't we say, well, okay, if this is the absolute truth, then still, why is my mentality in such a wrecked condition? Why don't we take to it immediately and say, well, let me put the top on the bottle real nicely and never open it and go for it? What is it that the spiritual master has given us to want to go back home, back to God? Because a lot of us won't be going back to God.